Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art.
Today, I'm talking art with Wim Roofs of If Art Gallery in Columbia, South Carolina. We're talking about their Mark Flowers exhibition, Washing the Dust, which goes on until November 19th, 2016. We are still in the process of lining up sponsors for Let's Talk Art with Brooke, but in the meantime, if you'd like to support the podcast,
please look for my book, Reptiles on Caffeine, on Amazon. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
I'm good.
Awesome. So tell me about the Mark Flowers exhibition. He's from Asheville, right?
Well, he's actually from Greenville, South Carolina.
Okay.
Technically, he was born in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
but as a child, very young, his parents and him, they moved to Greenville, where his dad, Tom Flowers,
mm-hmm.
Was the head of the art department at Furman University for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom is sort of really a mainstay. He's 88 now, but you know, in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, was really a mainstay of the South Carolina art scene.
Right.
And everybody really knows him. And in fact, poor Mark still sometimes has to suffer the indignity of being referred to as Tom.
Right, exactly.
even though he is well into his 60s, you know, but...
He's
from Greenville. He grew up there, and he got his art degree at the University of South Carolina in Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
He and his wife, Christy Higbee, who is a filmmaker, and before that, actually, was a bookmake artist, sort of a real pioneer in that genre. But they lived in Bluffton, South Carolina, for a while,
uh-huh.
which is near Hilton Head in the Lowcountry.
Right.
And after that, up until, I guess it was about 2 or 3 years ago, they taught at a prep school in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
For 23 years.
Wow.
All that time, I mean, for at least 15 years, I've been really familiar with Mark's work.
Mm-hmm.
But since, I always loved it. But since he was sort of far away, and since his work tends to be heavy and sometimes bulky,
right?
There would be some logistical complications. There would have been some logistical complications about having him in the gallery. So, when a few years ago he announced on Facebook that he and Christy were moving back south.
Oh, cool.
More specifically to the Asheville area. They live in Alexander, mm-hmm. in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, all right.
That's closer.
This is nice, you know. And So Tom and I did a little mating dance for a while, because
uh-huh.
he wanted to be in the gallery really badly as well. And mm-hmm. I'd had my eye on him because I've always admired work, thought it was very original and
right.
beautiful work.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some stage, when I had some space in the gallery, I invited him to come to the gallery. I added actually... last year, 4 new artists to the gallery, and in December, I did a show for group show with all 4 of them, introducing them all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes these things take a while. I mean, I usually look at artists for years
right.
before I take them to the gallery. It seldom happens that I see somebody's work and immediately jump on it.
Right.
I think the shortest that it's ever been is maybe a year and a half, and often it takes longer.
Wow.
Well, I mean, you know, you cannot just add willy-nilly to the gallery to begin with, and it's just not just a matter of physical space,
uh-huh.
But it's also a matter of, you know, having enough time to represent people decently, you know, having enough energy,
mm-hmm.
all of that. So, you know, you have to be sort of judicious when you do that.
Right.
And there are always a bunch of artists sort of on my radar. And usually they're people I look at for quite a while. And so Mark was a prime example of that, you mm-hmm. know. Always loved the work. And so when it became more feasible because they moved back from Pennsylvania to North Carolina, mm-hmm. I jumped on it, and here he is.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he does mixed media, and it's really interesting. I was looking at a lot of his stuff, and it looks really great.
Yeah, what he does is he works mostly on wood panels, mm-hmm. and he paints on them. He does photo transfers on them, you know, photos that he either finds or that he takes himself. Mm-hmm. Like in this show, there are several photos of skateboarders mm-hmm. who we photographed in Barcelona in March this year when he was there. He and Christy were there on vacation. Mm-hmm. And so they are, you know, through editing, the skateboards are not there anymore. So you only get the figures in the specific skateboarders sort mm-hmm. of pose or several poses mm-hmm. in action. And so he uses a photo transfer to put them on the support, which is usually, like I said, wood. And he manipulates these images on the computer. He might make them a little fuzzier if he likes that. Mm-hmm. And then once he has transferred them, he might paint over them in some fashion, you know, sort of enhance them with paint or sort of obscure them more with paint. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, we have straight paint, we have photo transfers, a fountain, photos on photos he takes himself that he then manipulates, perhaps paints over. There are pieces of wood, just stuff that he assembles mm-hmm. that he might put on there somewhere so to add a certain accent. Often that's painted wood of a certain color. Sometimes he might add a little paint himself. Mm-hmm. Then he adds pieces of wood, either straight or not so straight, sometimes even sort of with a wave shape. Mm-hmm. On top or on the sides of paintings,
right.
So that they sort of that you know, in addition to giving the impression of being paintings, they also read very much as objects mm-hmm. because of their irregular shapes,
right?
And you know, because the wood that he works on is fairly thick itself, and is often hung with cleats or you know from strips of wood on the back, so they sometimes tend to come a little bit off the wall. But they have sort of a sculptural, object-like feel as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mixed media aspect really goes in any kind of direction that you can think of. And it just makes the pieces very vivid, very lively, gives them a delicious sort of ambiguity,
right.
Between painting and object. He works in. He typically doesn't work on one piece of surface, one board. They are usually several boards put together, and sometimes they are in a sort of a classic rectangular or square format with the enhancement of those pieces of wood that I talked about.
Right.
But often they might not be all the same height. Let alone the same width.
Mm-hmm.
So if you then have a lower piece of wood sitting next between a taller one or in between two taller ones, you also instantly create negative space between the planes themselves.
Yeah.
And so you see part of the wall, you know, to which they are attached, from which they are hung.
Right.
You can see parts of the walls, which again sort of emphasizes that sculptural object-like quality of the artworks.
Right. Right. And it kind of incorporates the space into the composition. I think that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. Very much so. And it actually was kind of funny because last year when we were talking about pricing, you know, I don't know if most people know that, but, you know, typically prices for an artist's work tend to go along the lines of size.
Right.
You know, simply speaking, the larger, the more expensive.
Right. The more materials,
you know, well, yeah, exactly. Now, typically, the per square inch price might go down as a piece gets bigger,
mm-hmm.
Meaning that smaller pieces are relatively more expensive than bigger pieces. The bigger pieces in absolute terms are more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've been talking about his prices. We had sort of an interesting little discussion as to whether or not the negative space
should be included.
That is in some of his pieces, you know, should be included in the size of the piece.
Yeah.
It's, you know, because while sort of a straightforward manner, the piece isn't there,
right.
The negative spaces are a crucial component for the work of art.
Uh-huh.
And so, therefore, the wall behind the piece, the wall that the piece is hanging from, what you can see off that wall between the different size pieces or surface
mm-hmm.
become an integral part of the piece.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's not a very important discussion, but it is something that we sort of brainstormed a little bit about.
Well, I think it is because, I mean, you're right. They would have had the wall anyway, but the wall wouldn't be special if it wasn't for his work.
That's right. That's right.
So I think he has full rights to charge.
We don't sell the wall.
Well, maybe you should.
Yeah, that would be too much trouble. I have to replace walls all the time.
So I would think you'd be well within your right to do so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, talk them into it.
Most people have walls, so we're usually off the hook.
Right, right. Well, something else I liked about him was that he calls it visual poetry.
Right.
And this is kind of like normal stuff. Like his compositions are called Daily Life, The Day Job, The Commute, stuff, you know, stuff like that, stuff that happens every day. It's not anything groundbreaking or earth-shaking, but it's just, you know, normal stuff, and it's visual poetry, I think, like what you said.
Yeah, it is. I mean, these things are about his life, you know. They are sort of steeped in literal experiences that he might have had,
mm-hmm.
but the sort of result of using a literal experience into his art never makes for a literal narrative.
Right.
You know, it's sort of more something might happen, you know, or something might be going on, and he has all kinds of associations with it, you know, or they might be the impetus for him thinking in a certain direction, things like that. And so they become the impetus for a sort of visually poetic work of art
mm-hmm.
that is sort of based in those experiences without literally trying to create a narrative of those experiences.
Right.
These experiences could be anything. Like you said, one of the pieces is called The Commute. Well, you know, Mark and Christy, his wife, like I said, taught for 23 years at a boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
So their job was literally across the street.
Right.
You know, they lived in a house on campus. The classrooms were across the street. So was their studio.
Mm-hmm.
And so the commute was a very short one.
It wasn't very far.
Right. Once they moved to the Asheville area, he took a part-time job at the University of South Carolina Upstate, which is in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, he has a 75-mile commute back and forth.
Yeah,
so
quite a change.
That's a dramatic change in his life and a dramatic change in how his days are organized.
Right.
So, you know, so that becomes then sort of the fodder for sort of, you know, a poetic piece of work mm-hmm. around that theme.
Mm-hmm.
There's another piece that is called Alderney Flight,
mm-hmm.
and that had to do with coming back from upstate New York, from the Albany Airport. Mm-hmm. Mark, in the summer, had a residency at Golden Pains for a month,
mm-hmm.
and in between, for the 4th of July, he went home. And he was at the airport, and it was sort of a memorable experience. You know, sort of, he liked the arrows on the tarmac that he could see from the airplane and the sort of, you know, suggested texture that they gave. But also, somebody came on board with a service monkey.
Service monkey?
Yeah, right, exactly. That was his response. He had never seen a service monkey, you know.
Right.
And, I mean, service dogs or what have you, but monkeys.
Yeah, yeah.
So he kind of thought that perhaps that person was just trying to get the monkey on board without having to stick him in a box.
Right, right.
Cargo space, you know. But either way, as he said, you know, that day did not disappoint.
Yeah.
And so that sort of found itself back into a work of art. Another example would be a piece called Relocation.
Mm-hmm.
And that had to do with moving his dad, you know, whom I mentioned before, Tom Flowers, who used to teach at Furman University in Greenville.
Right.
Moving Tom from a gorgeous, gorgeous sort of, you know, mountain home, or rather, you know, it was a beautiful home in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains,
mm-hmm.
outside of Greenville and Dacresville, which is part of Easley. And moving from there, from outside of Greenville, to a place in the city where he would be much closer to things that somebody at 88 years of age might need.
Mm-hmm.
Because it became increasingly an issue for Tom and for the family about him living there by himself,
mm-hmm.
sort of not quite in the middle of nowhere, but close enough to it.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, that was sort of an emotionally, I mean, aside from an organizationally and physically taxing endeavor, that was also sort of a real emotional period, you know, because Tom had lived in that house for quite a while.
Right.
He actually lived there twice. And you know, that was a big deal. So that would find its way into one of his paintings. Another one is The Caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
Christy got a new knee after the summer,
mm-hmm.
and you know, they obviously knew that was going to have all kinds of repercussions and implications for their lives for a few months. You know, what with her being not very well able to walk for a while and what have you.
Right.
But they clearly had sort of not anticipated the emotional toll that it would take to deal with all these issues.
Yeah.
And, well, they were there. So, again, fodder for his art.
Yeah, definitely use them.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's... I think that's so great that you can, like, just take, you know, just turmoil and things that are just... Because, yeah, that is emotional, moving from your, you know, your childhood home, like moving your parents. I mean, my parents both sets of their parents. So, I mean, I know the turmoil and the pain that causes.
Right.
And they're not artists.
But it was actually not his childhood home, but it was a home that his dad was very much attached to.
Right.
He had lived there before and then had sold the house to live somewhere else, but eventually ended up buying it back. I mean, he was really very attached. So even though it wasn't Tom's childhood home,
still memories.
Exactly. Well, and a place that his father was very much attached to, you know. So I mean, it had all kinds of implications.
Yeah. So yeah, art's the perfect medium to deal with that.
Right. Now the other thing that is interesting is that speaking in terms of poetry, that this body of work is all made in modules.
Mm-hmm.
He would have, typically the way he would work is he would put together a bunch of, you know, surfaces, planes in a certain sort of construction and a certain composition, and then start working on it and finish a piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
With these, he did not work on one piece at a time.
Mm-hmm.
What he did is he worked on dozens of smaller pieces of surface, smaller pieces of wood, you know, flat wood surfaces.
Right.
And concentrated very much on each surface, on each part, each module, if you like, separately, rather than having the end product in mind. So, you know, so he would have a bunch of those planes that he would paint on. He would have a bunch of these planes where he would do these photo transfers on.
Mm-hmm.
And he would create dozens of those. And then they would all just sort of sit around. And
so he kind of mass-produced part of it?
Well, he did a film production of the parks, if you like.
Right.
Without knowing what the end products would be.
Uh-huh.
And then when he had a whole lot of these done, then he started to put them together,
uh-huh.
you know, with those sort of experiences, these personal experiences that he wanted to translate poetically, as we said, you know,
right.
into a work of art
mm-hmm.
In mind. And he would start putting stuff together, see how they would look together, see how they would address, or if they failed, not address what he had in mind.
Right.
And started to sort of this big, big puzzle.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, the reason he had done a little bit of that in the last few years, but this really sort of took on new heights, I guess, when he was at that residency at Golden Pains, which is in New Berlin, upstate New York,
uh-huh.
because he said he had a lot of space there.
Uh-huh.
He had a tremendous amount of space there, so sort of physically, logistically, it was possible for him to make all these individual parts and then sort of spread them around and then let the puzzling begin, you know.
Wow.
And so a bunch of them he put together at Golden, a lot of them actually.
Uh-huh.
But when he had to come back to Greenville, they had to be taken apart again, a lot of them, not all of them, to fit into his Subaru. So when he came back, you know, a lot of them came out half or complete, you know, but
yeah.
there were still individual pieces. And so he might have sort of rethought a few of them.
Uh-huh.
But simply having the space at Golden to sort of spread out
right.
and work in that way sort of created this new way of working.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did is, he says, he could just pay more attention to the surface of each individual part because he was never preoccupied with what the end result would be.
Right.
And that was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, that's a lot.
He also used...
That's a lot of keeping track of stuff.
It is, you know, but it's also kind of... But again, the way he looks at it is as sentences of a poem. Each sort of piece, each module was a potential sentence for a visual poem.
Yeah.
And then he sort of starts looking which sentences or which modules might work together well to make that poetic point of one of his experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an interesting way of working.
Yeah.
What he also got to do at Golden, you know, artists who go in residence there, you know, Golden makes paint, acrylic paint.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of it, obviously, different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get there as an artist, you can get any paint you want.
Mm-hmm.
And as much of it as you want.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, well, there were paints that were always available to him in principle if he had bought them, but that he might not always have bought. You know, you go and buy paints and you sort of stick with your preferred colors. So what you think are your preferred colors.
Right.
Now anything was available.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that he used that he hadn't used much in the past was green.
Uh-huh.
And so several of these pieces have green in it.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of that expanded his arsenal, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
It's his potential vocabulary as well.
Cool.
So that was another sort of result of that residency.
Yeah.
And then there are a few pieces that have these very interesting modules in them, parts in them that read like abstract paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really very beautiful. Except, you know, and you know, some of them Tom made, he just, Mark made, see, I did it again. Mark made, and he painted them, but there were also a few that were, if you like, ready-made.
Yeah.
And he actually got them at Golden. What happens at Golden is that every paint swatch, you know, every sort of sample is created by hand. So there's literally somebody painting these little swatches.
Mm-hmm.
And then go to stores and artists who might be interested in these particular colors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do that and use a protective sheet underneath. And so that protective sheet gets all these sort of bits and pieces of paint on
swatches
them
on
while
it.
They're creating those swatches.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mark saw a bunch to those and very much liked them, and asked whether he could have some of them, and that was, of course, no problem. Mm-hmm. So they went straight into some of his pieces.
Cool.
And one of those pieces is called The History of Paint,
uh-huh.
And with having one of those protective sheets in there, it is literally the history of paint.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah, that's very literal.
It is, absolutely.
Wow, that's not something, that's not really anything you could plan. That's very fortunate that it happened.
That is sort of recognizing an opportunity when we see it.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
It's not an accident. You know, artists don't have happy accidents, things that happen while they paint. Mm-hmm. That they didn't intend to happen, and they look at it and they like it, and so their role as an artist is to say yay or nay.
Right.
In this case, it's essentially a sort of an odd found object, if you like.
Right.
You know, it's not sort of found object that you typically see in artworks, because they are almost like little paintings in and of themselves.
Yeah.
Except that they were not created with making a painting in mind, they were just created as a consequence, if you like, as a residue of creating those paint swatches.
Mm-hmm.
And they look great. You know, of course, it all still depends on how you work them into a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
But that's his role as an artist, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is so cool. That's just, that. What a happy accident. You can plan a better thing. That's fantastic.
But you have to recognize it.
Yeah.
And of course, he has always... his mind on things like that. When you go to his studio, there are all these things lying around, pieces of wood, interesting surfaces, maybe little metal, steel object, you know, whatever he thinks he might be using at some space or that he could use. And he has a pretty big inventory,
mm-hmm.
and a pretty good memory of what's there.
That's
so
nice.
When he's working on something, he'll go like, oh, hold on a second, did I not have little piece of wood sitting somewhere that had this yellow and red on it. Let's see how that would work. And he'll go find it and try it out.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, it's sort of part of the materials he uses.
Yeah. That's awesome. So how long does this exhibition going on till?
The show is up until November the 19th.
Okay. Cool. So still some time to go see it.
Absolutely. It opened on October the 28th. If people want to come by, they should.
Cool.
On November the 17th, which is a Thursday, there is something in this neighborhood of Columbia, South Carolina, that's called Vista Lights, that's been going on for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And that is sort of a holiday season festivity, if you like, celebration. All the shops in the Vista area of downtown Columbia are open until 9.
Mm-hmm.
Including all the galleries.
Cool.
And so there are thousands of people up and about, walking the sidewalks, popping into all these businesses.
Right.
And so that is, this show will still be up when that event takes place.
Okay.
That's a nice event. You know, it's a bit of a zoo because of the number of people there, but it's a great event.
Right.
And it produces great exposure for whomever is open that night, which is just about anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
In the Vista area.
So, well, that sounds really great. So we're going to put a link to your website, which will have your address and everything there. So if anyone wants to go see it, which they should, they can easily find it and go to it. But thanks so much for chatting with me. This is awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for your interest. I'm glad you wanted to talk about this. It is really a wonderful show. He's a great artist.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds great. And I love the stuff I've seen.
Good.
So yeah.
Thank you.
So, and also, I wanted to, I don't know why I didn't notice this before, but I was looking on your Facebook page, and I saw that you studied Irish history.
Irish political studies, yes.
Okay. Well, I am working on a book of some sort on, do you know who Hugh Lane is?
Do I know what?
Do you know, are you familiar with the Hugh Lane Gallery or the Hugh Lane?
The name sounds familiar, but I couldn't say.
Right. Not many people know who he is, so I'm working on this book that no one, of someone who no one has heard of, but they will after I'm done, because he's awesome. Are you familiar with Lady Gregory?
Mm-hmm.
He is her. She was married to the governor of Ceylon,
I'm not up to speed much on my Ceylon politics.
If you are,
except for the Tamil Tigers. But.
See, I'm not even up on them.
All right.
But well, you'll know all about Hugh Lane when I'm done with my book, which if I ever get done with it. But he's a great guy.
But you said it's a gallery, Hugh Lane.
Well, it's called the Dublin City Gallery. It's called the Dublin City Gallery, the Hugh Lane. He basically brought art to Dublin.
Okay.
And so he.
Well, like I said, the name sounds familiar, but I couldn't place it. Of course, I lived in Belfast.
Right.
Rather than Dublin. I mean, I've been to Dublin several times, but I'm much more familiar with Belfast.
Right.
Certainly Belfast of 3 decades ago.
Wow. That's really cool. So you're from the Netherlands and you know Irish history or Irish politics and you're in Columbia, South Carolina. That's incredible.
You know, I also have a history graduate degree and undergraduate degree in the Netherlands.
Cool.
And I have a grad degree in Belfast in Irish political studies. And I got one in the United States in journalism.
Wow. Wow. Very cool. So
are we still taping?
Huh?
Are we still taping?
No.
Oh.
No, I just brought that up because I wanted to ask you if you knew about Hugh Lane. So.
Right.
So yeah, this won't be on the interview.
Hey, so how many images do you want?
As many as you can send. Like 4 or 5. Like typically, it's like some people send like 1. Some people send like 3. I mean,
I can send you a ton, and you would probably prefer a low res because they're going to go on your site.
It doesn't really matter. I like a lot. But yeah, if you could like whatever shows up best.
What I'll do is, you know, Mark usually has just straightforward images, but he also usually has images that have the title and all that on them, and I'll send you those.
That would be awesome. But
you don't just type any of that in, it's right straight on there.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be perfect.
I will do that right away.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Wim. This is so great. Thank you so much to Wim Roofs of the If Art Gallery for telling us about the Mark Flowers exhibition. And thank you for listening. It's always fun to talk to Wim. And if you're in the Columbia area, check out the gallery.